It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Glad you're here. Thrilled you're here. Thanks to everyone who met me in New Jersey last night. It was great being at Little Point Bookshop. I had a chance to address everybody and sign a bunch of books and get home at a decent time and ready to go today. This hour, we're going to be joined by Mark Dubowitz. This guy knows everything about defense and world affairs, just back from Israel. He's the CEO of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies and really a handle on American policy today. Also, the passing of Henry Kissinger. He's 100 years old, but man, I talked to him at the Al Smith dinner 3 weeks ago where he was keynote speaker, and he is right on top of things. He just got back from China at 100, so his passing, it's hard to be sad, but man, what a life. Big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
They realized that this is a wire into what they said was a company with no known purpose, meaning it was a shell company or a fake company. The politically exposed person who owned the account was the son of the former vice president of the United States.
This is getting complicated, but it's also getting interesting. There is Chairman Comer yesterday with Sean Hannity. More proof where there's the name Hunter Biden, there is fire, there's smoke, and a mysterious bank account. The latest activity, perhaps the most disturbing yet, and his closed-door testimony awaits.
Number two.
Look, if Biden died tomorrow, and then what do they do with Kamala Harris? Exactly. I think they have no cards. And they're looking at this game, and I don't know. I think they're depending upon party loyalty, and they're depending upon Trump getting convicted.
2024, Biden spiraling, gaffing, but still running as it becomes clear as an opportunity exists for a Republican sweep of every branch of government. The Hail Mary, demonize, institutionalize, jail Donald Trump, and let him bring the party down with him. Will that work?
Number one.
And so he's under pressure. And he doesn't want to alienate what has become, thanks to his own efforts, an important part of his constituency. So he seems to be kind of straddling supporting Israel and yet saying now, but don't be too mean to the Palestinians. So I think that's where he is. I think he's kind of trapped here.
Talking about the president, that is, of course, the great Brit Hume. Pause remains on pause. More hostage releases lead to another day delay as Israel keeps getting people back but have to give up every 3 prisoners for every 3 innocent hostages they get. Evidence grows that President Biden is going wobbly on his support as the anti-Israeli movement, which is mostly Democrats, almost all Democrats, comes right to our front door at 1211 6th Avenue and Fox. I wasn't here, but they could not stop the Christmas tree lighting just across the street at Rockefeller Plaza. So evidently they came to us, where we have the New York Post, the Wall Street Journal, and of course Fox News. Good luck with that. Nazis, white supremacists, pro-Hamas. Good luck. Go find another country if that's you out there protesting. You're allowed to do it, but what you represent is despicable. What you don't understand is it's in America's interest to support Israel. The dedication, the loyalty between that nation and ours is really superior to any in the world. But yet you chose the other side. Just like you want to take a knee during the national anthem with the U.S. soccer team. Everything American, these clowns who decide to protest and swarm and screw up the Macy's Day, Thanksgiving Day parade, stop traffic, that's what they represent. But really, keep your eye on the prize, Mr. President. Your instincts were right. Back them up. Let them eradicate Hamas. Let them finish the job. Get hostages out. I get it. But let them win. Here's Senator Lindsey Graham, knowing that in the big picture, it's going to be all about dealing with Iran, too. Cut 5.
Let me tell our friends in Egypt and the United Arab Emirates, if you go into BRICS and join an organization made up of Iran, Russia, and China, you're going to make an enemy of me. Let me tell my friends in Saudi Arabia, I want you to normalize with Israel. I'd like to have a strategic relationship with you. But if you join BRICS, an organization basically controlled by Russia, China, and Iran, You will be an enemy of the United States. Biden has lost all respect and all fear to the Republican Party. Let's stand up for Israel without equivocation. Let's put pressure on the Biden administration to protect our troops. President Biden does not have the backs of those serving in Syria and Iraq. Mr. President, President Biden, you need to let the Iranians know if you keep trying to kill Americans, we're coming after you.
Those are some of the things we need to do in foreign policy. In terms of the fight, they got to let them fight. I know it's going to be tough. Evidently, Axios was reporting that the president made it clear to Netanyahu, you got to fight a lot more surgical in the south than you did in the north because you told everyone to go south. And I get that, but I don't think they need to be told that. You know, it's not one of these blind rage, I'm drunk and I'm just trying to kill people. They know that every innocent person killed is not their objective and works against their cause, and they don't like killing people, unlike Hamas, who would have killed every Israeli if they could have, if they weren't stopped. That, according to people who've been debriefed on television. So it's a very tough situation. Former Army Special Forces Green Beret Derek Anderson, cut two.
I think the Biden administration should probably see the looks on some of these hostages' faces as they're being released from Hamas. You know, Trace, it's really interesting to see what Hamas's PR campaign and narrative is right now. You know, if you look at the Hamas soldiers as they're transferring the hostages from their vans over to the Red Cross vans, right? They're in their uniforms. They've got their bandanas on. They've got their faces covered, which I would argue, why don't they uncover their faces? Show the world who you are. And, you know, you look at the faces on these hostages as they're being transferred over.
And you see how shell-shocked they are. Some of these kids refused to speak over a whisper because they were told if they spoke up, they'd be killed, forced to watch all the videos, some of which their own families being killed. We're just starting to get the details now. I don't think there's any rush. We just picture what it is and hope for the best. It is interesting that the head of this operation, who was in jail for 20 years, of Hamas, met with some of the hostages in the tunnels, and one 85-year-old told him off, said, you should be ashamed of yourself. We're the ones going for peace with Israel. We're the ones who wanted peace with Gaza, and you kidnapped and killed us. And he evidently said nothing back. But hopefully he'll be dead soon. The scary thing is, sometimes you let people out of prison or prisoner exchange, and they go on the straight and narrow. It doesn't seem like any of these guys come on the straight and narrow. They become more determined to be terrorists. Unless you have the son of Hamas who's out there now, who we've interviewed a number of times, who left the organization, turned on the organization, turned on his own family. But those pro-Palestinian protesters carrying swastikas swarmed Midtown, swarmed our building yesterday. Multiple arrests were made. There was swastika was seen on display aimed at protesting Rockefeller Center's annual tree lighting. Think about this. Why would you have a swastika related to Israel unless you're taunting them? You're actually thinking they embrace that? That swastika was used to eradicate Jews from the face of the earth. Millions died. Some were burned in ovens. Do you think that you can actually associate a swastika positively with Israel? Or is that what you plan on doing? Attacks on U.S. forces continue. Now we're seeing now since November 23rd, it's been kind of quiet. Well, yesterday there was some more attacks. U.S. Navy warship shot down an Iran-produced Houthi drone that got right near them. U.S. Central Command said approximately 11 o'clock in the South Red Sea, the USS Destroyer Kearney shot down the Iranian-produced KAS-04 unmanned aerial vehicle launched from the Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen. Now, I don't sit there, and I know some 9/11 families listening to me right now. I understand. I am not saying Saudi Arabia is this great democracy. Never will be. Little by little, they're opening up. But I far prefer having an alliance with Saudi Arabia than anything to do with Iran. Every time you try to isolate them, they say, fine, I got 1-800-CHINA. I got 1-800-RUSSIA. I could always get in touch with other democracies like Japan. If you want to walk away, America, just know this. You walk away from oil, gas, possible investment, positive in Saudi Arabia, and Saudi investment in us. And then you walk to the Houthi rebels, really? They were rocketing Saudi Arabia. You took them off the terror watch list. You condemned Saudi Arabia as a pariah nation. This all led to what we're doing right now, allowing Iran to sell their oil, to keep the oil price down because we're not producing like we should. That's one of the factors. They get that money. They're not making lives better for their people. They're making lives better and getting more guns and weapons to Hezbollah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad. and those militias in Iraq. That's what happened. I'd have a lot more respect for you, President Biden, if you stood up and said, man, did I blow it? Watch what I do for the next 11 months. So when we come back, I'll take your calls on this. And also, if you're going to write me, you could write me right now. You could join Locals and find out about it, locals.com. I got my own site. We're building up our own community there so people can get directly in touch with me. I can read what you have to say and get right back to you rather than these mass emails. So you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Look, if Biden died tomorrow, and then what do they do with Kamala Harris? They're going to put her on the moon? Like, what are they going to do? She's the vice president. I think they have no cards. And they're looking at this game. And I don't know. I think they're depending upon party loyalty. And they're depending upon Trump getting convicted and arrested. I mean, imprisoned, rather. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't think it is. It doesn't seem to. It seems like it's a bunch of trumped up charges. No pun intended.
And to tell you, it bothers me for the country because, you know, you were looking at Joe Biden's track record. He's got 37% approval rating. I don't know where the 37% is. And then the people that agree with him are upset with him about the Israel stance, which is the right stance. And as green as this clown is, this president is, with all the things that he jammed down our throats and the mandates and the subsidies with electric cars and the windmills that don't work, and the solar panels that we're buying from China, that's still not good enough for the far left. So this whole base is falling apart, and he was already shedding Hispanic votes. He's shedding African-American votes. He's shedding young votes. And people are looking at Trump's record. He's not doing a lot. Trump is not doing a lot. I think it's intentional. So he's not doing a lot, and they're going after him, and they've taken every little thing he says. Look, he's extremist. He's a fascist. He is Hitler. Now think about this. If Trump holds on to this lead, becomes the nominee, and I'm not saying he will, but it looks like he is. Governor Haley's coming on strong, getting Ken Langone, getting the Koch brothers, you know, having well-received in South Carolina, seems to be pulling ahead in some states against DeSantis. But let's just say it's Trump. If he wins the election, like he should, on just pure merit, people are going to think the country is over, that there's not going to be any democracy, that he's going to take your rights away, that he's going to take freedom away. The stuff that they're saying about him, if people believe this, and judging by what people are saying now about things like October 7th being totally fiction, they'll believe anything, a huge portion of the masses. The country will just be split in half. I'm not going to listen to Trump. I'm not going to pay attention to Trump. But if you're doing that 13 months out, I just hope people see through it and will not be manipulated like they were subtly with Silicon Valley and Facebook and Instagram and now TikTok. I hope people are wising up and taking control of their lives. Last night at this New Jersey book signing, I was able to talk for probably a half hour, and I took questions for another 15, 20. And I got this question a lot. How do I know what to look at to know what's true? Of course, FoxNews.com. Get it. Our show. I'm biased by our show. If I say something's not true, it's by mistake. But they go, well, you know, I read something, I see something, and I'm thinking to myself, is this true? How do I know? And then when Apple says, we'll verify, people go, really? You're going to verify it? Oh, Facebook, you're going to verify it? With your Zuckerbucks? You're going to verify it? Matt Taibbi exposed what Twitter was? Going to verify it? I mean, I trust more what's on Twitter, but I wouldn't say what everybody who posts things are correct. I mean, there's still some institutions that you can trust, but always be skeptical. Always read more than one thing. You pick up the Washington Post and the Washington Times. You take a look at the New York Post and take a look at the Daily News. Look at the editorials, and then you say, you know, a lot of the stuff they said has turned out to be true. This stuff was reported accurately. This is a columnist and a show I can believe in. And you're just going to have to do your own homework. Even if you don't do this for a living like we are lucky enough to do, you're going to have to do your own homework. So let's go look at 2024. Looks like Joe Manchin is showing indications he's going to run. And he says, never before in our history has there been a better opportunity, it seems, to run as a third-party candidate and have a legitimate shot. To me, that walking tour, that listening tour, might have Joe Manchin jumping in. Why? Well, he's 76 years old, looks younger, looks very healthy, and he cannot hold on to that Senate seat. But he is well-known, name recognition. His problem is that both sides resent him for not going all the way for Republicans and not being there for Democrats. So Joe Rogan coming out saying what he's saying is 100% right. The thing that's going to also help Trump is that RFK, Cornel West, Jill Stein are all in this thing. Could they all jump out at the last minute? Maybe. But you want to hear polarization? So we know this. Part of the reason, if you think about it, one of the things that you found, you might have found, that got you angry about Trump, he sent federal troops into places like Portland. He said, I should send the National Guard into places like Chicago. He said, you got to crack down on crime in New York City. And people go, stay out of this. What do you know about us? I don't want to see federal troops. The mayor marching against us. Now we see crime totally out of control in almost every major city. We see illegal immigration. Oh, he's so mean to Hispanics. No, he's not. He just wanted to reinforce our border. Oh, his family separation policies. I knew the intent. They quickly reversed that policy. He read the books. Melania got as mad at him as any Democrat. Reversed it. But you know his intent was to stop the magnet. If I separate the families because they were breaking the law by coming here, like if you were caught doing a deal with a DUI, they take away your kids, they bring you to prison, and they send your kids somewhere safe. That's what they were doing. It didn't work. It wasn't right. It was too abrasive. I got it. That's not child separation. But as you look at all these different pockets and his policies, it causes so much controversy. You remember one of the first things he said is, I got to get rid of these sanctuary cities. And then the sanctuary cities sued back to keep sanctuary city status in place. Now how do you feel? You got 12,000 people in Chicago that you can't handle. You have almost 100,000 costing $5 billion a year to New York City. We're now cutting library hours and cops because of it. Now, how do you feel about President Trump's sanctuary city policy? But listen, these crazies can't see it. Like one of the worst mayors ever, Mayor Brandon Johnson of Chicago. Listen to what he says is the problem. Cut 23.
Quite frankly, they've been very intentional about going after democratically ran cities that are led by people of color. And their whole motivation is to create disruption and chaos, because that's what that particular party has been about. Right, this is the same political party that did not want to accept that President Obama was actually an American. It's the same Republican right-wing extremism that stormed the Capitol. It's the same right-wing extremism that refuses to accept the results of the Civil War. It's raggedy. It's disrespectful. It's mean-spirited. It's an unclean spirit, quite frankly. And so I got you. I got you. I just want to make sure that people understand what we're facing.
Number one, you idiot. It was the Democrats who didn't want to face up to the results of the Civil War. Lincoln was a Republican. Frederick Douglass was a Republican. Are you that uneducated? Number two, storming the Capitol wasn't a policy. That was something that was a bad day, terrible day. Nobody makes excuses for it. That's not a policy. If you want to see what the problem is, your governor said zero cash bail. Your predecessor said cops can't chase down bandits. Your state said you could steal up to $1,000 worth of goods from any retail shop. That's your problem, not race.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We don't support displacement outside of Gaza. And look, most of these people don't want to leave. That's their home. Now, they've been internally displaced to a fairly well, obviously, particularly out of the north. And so, as we've also said, is that we don't support southern operations unless or until the Israelis can show that they have accounted for all the internally displaced people of Gaza.
That was Admiral Kirby, obviously, talking about the situation now. We're at a big pause. Another day it's going to be extended. We're supposed to, that means 10 get out. That's the word. 10 get out, and you get a pause. And now we're two extra days in overtime, and Israel has to go back. The question is, What are you going to do with world opinion, mostly against him, them going back, hoping for a sustained peace? Nobody who looks at the situation rationally would ever think it's in Israel's interest to not finish off Hamas. Anybody who just wants Hamas to live another day and just essentially get detention would allow it to stop right now. Mark Dubowitz knows all this. He's the CEO of Foundation for Defensive Democracies, and he was just over in Israel. Mark, we got an extension on the hostages. Do you think it was a good move to let the prime minister said, you give me 10, you get a pause. So every day that you give me 10, you get a pause. In turn, they get on the average 30 back, 30 prisoners.
Yeah, Brian, and 30 prisoners who've been either arrested or convicted of terrorism offenses who were trying to kill Israelis. In fact, today there was another terrorist attack in Jerusalem where two terrorists who had been formally jailed for terrorism offenses killed three Israelis and injured dozens. So it's a stark reminder of the hundreds of Palestinians that are being released, including into Jerusalem as part of this hostage deal.
So what was your sense when you went over there? We know about this as a country at war. We also heard about random attacks that took place. One was, it seems to be Hamas-related attacks. Shootings took place in two separate cities already, separate from the war effort in the middle of a pause. So what was your sense when you were there, Mark?
Well, I think on one hand, I mean, the Israeli government has no choice but to try to get as many of the hostages back. I also fear that many more hostages are actually dead than are being publicly reported. On the other hand, Israel has to continue, as you said, Brian. I mean, if they emerge standing, Hamas has made it clear that they will repeat the October 7th atrocities over and over again. So there's no Israeli prime minister who cannot finish the job, because if he doesn't, Israelis are not going back to live in their homes in the southern border. And by the way, you know, speaking of displaced persons, there are 250,000 displaced Israelis, about 170,000 from the south, 80,000 from the north, who are not in their homes, you know, who are now currently living in the center of Israel, who aren't going back until Israel is able to deal both with Hamas and with Hezbollah on the northern border.
What have they been told about possibly taking the fight to Hezbollah?
Well, certainly the Israeli military wants to do that. They recognize that they have to. I mean, Hezbollah is even more dangerous enemy than Hamas. They've got thousands of these hardened Hezbollah terrorists right on the northern border there, 150,000 missiles, including precision-guided missiles that can do severe damage to Israeli population centers. And the Israeli military wants to do it. The United States is putting mass pressure on the Israeli government not to open up a second front.
And how serious do you think they are? Are those just words, or do you think those are actions?
Well, the Israelis are serious. The United States could turn words into action by delaying or stopping military resupply. Obviously, Israel depends on the United States for a number of key weapon systems and ammunition. And certainly, if the Biden administration wanted to put serious pressure on Israel, they could stop that resupply. I mean, it would be a huge confrontation between the Israeli government and the Biden administration over that, and hopefully Congress would weigh in and put counter pressure on the Biden administration. But that could end up being a serious crisis in U.S.-Israel relations.
Mark, tell me if this is correct. They say some people have speculated that the Israelis have heard the IDF has already taken out between 2,000 and 5,000 Hamas fighters, but about 20,000 remain, and most are in the south, and they're ready for this confrontation.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, I heard the numbers around 5,500 Hamas fighters of a total force, maybe about 30,000. But, you know, many of them melted away into the south. I mean, my fear, Brian, is, and I talked to the Israeli military about this, is that this sounds very similar to what happened in 2003 in the Iraq War when we came in the first 100 days and wiped out Saddam's frontline forces. But many of his special forces and generals and hardened fighters had melted away and were planning a vicious insurgency against us. So I think the Israeli military is obviously preparing for that in the south, and they understand that they're going to be confronting a hardened force buried deep in the tunnels waiting for them to inflict as many casualties as possible.
Mark, the other thing is we were told, the Axios is reporting, and I don't think anyone thinks this is not true, that President Biden said you got to be much more surgical about going in the south, and just much more surgical than you were in the north, because they did say go south and you'll be safe. So there's got to be a plan, some type of corridor to let civilians get out, so to speak, and then be able to find out who is leaving to make sure fighters aren't leaving. But in the big picture, how firm as Secretary of State Blinken sits in on the War Council meeting in Israel today. How firm are the Biden team on Netanyahu and company?
Well, I think the big concern, and we saw this in President Biden's tweet a couple of days ago, which his senior administration official sort of walked back. It was one of those, you know, classic cleanup on aisle seven, when Joe Biden has said something. But this case was a tweet, and the tweet suggested that the war should be brought to an end, and that means permanent ceasefire, and that means Hamas left standing and the winner in this confrontation after its, you know, brutal attack on Israel. I think the Israelis are worried about that. The Biden administration is going to find excuses to extend the ceasefire and make it permanent. The Israelis are planning with humanitarian corridors, with places in southern Gaza where Gazans can seek refuge. And remember, Brian, you've got this vast territory of Sinai, right? It's owned by Egypt. And it's right over the Gaza border. And the president of Egypt, Sisi, has refused to allow any Gazans into Sinai, despite the fact that it is an empty territory where they could set up homes. In fact, there's thousands of apartments that are currently not being used. But the Egyptians have been adamant, no Palestinians into Sinai.
Why?
Well, because I think Sisi doesn't want, you know, Hamas. He doesn't want Hamas as part of the global Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood has threatened his government. In fact, he took over from a Muslim Brotherhood leader, Morsi. And he feels that having Palestinians in Sinai would mean Palestinians in Cairo. And he doesn't want to deal with the violence, incitement, and terrorism that he thinks would come from that. So he's basically shut his border. The Jordanians have shut their border. You know, none of them want Palestinians. They think this is Israel's problem, and Israel's got to deal with it.
Yeah, no, it's everybody. But at the same time, they're condemning these actions and trying to call for a ceasefire when they know if Hamas lives, their life is more difficult. You can't kill all of them, but we're seeing with ISIS and al-Qaeda, you can suppress, you can diminish. Constant vigilance can go a long way to stopping this terror scourge.
That's exactly right, Brian. I mean, and by the way, your point on these Arab leaders is exactly right. I mean, I've been speaking to these Arab leaders, and in private, they'll tell you they want Israel to demolish Hamas. They understand that Hamas is not only a threat to Israel, but a threat to them, a threat to the region. And there's no way to have peace and prosperity and stability in the region if Hamas survives, if Hezbollah survives. And by the way, all of this will be a huge victory for the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, who's been orchestrating all of these attacks sitting in Tehran. And not being touched.
So when we look at this now, I don't know how many more they have to get to give up, but they say that they are not. Hamas says they're not in control of all the hostages. Can you give me the dynamic there and tell me how it really works? Are they a bunch of gangs like Crips and Bloods who don't speak to each other but have the same objective, create havoc, or is it Hamas in charge of Islamic Jihad and all the other sects, and it's just a matter of them saying, hand back the hostages, or do they have to actually go in and find them?
No, Hamas is in control of the territory. All of these dozen Palestinian terrorist organizations that operate in Gaza are part of a joint Palestinian command center. They coordinate military activities, political activities. They know where the hostages are, and Hamas is just playing the shell game, using it as, you know, a form of both emotional torture for Israelis who are waiting to hear from their loved ones, as well as playing games with the United States, the Qataris, and the Egyptians, and pretending that they don't know where the hostages are. Again, I fear that there aren't as many live hostages left as people assume. I think maybe perhaps dozens of them have been killed, and there may be very few left to hand over. I really hope I'm wrong, but that's my fear.
In the big picture, and by the way, I'm talking to Mark Dubowitz, CEO of Foundation for Defense of Democracies. We have to make more weapons. We got to do it quicker. We got to increase our industrial base. We have to expand the number of companies that make these weapons. For-profit business. This is not a charity. So this could be a for-profit business and a massive investment. And as we see, Taiwan needs weapons. Ukraine needs weapons. Eastern Europe realizes they can't depend on old 1980s versions of Russia, Soviet weaponry, if they're going to be effective NATO members. So we have customers out there, some of which can write checks for this money, but we're not capable of getting these arms out. For example, how long has Taiwan waited for what they ordered 18 months ago? So how hard would it be, from what you know, Mark, to expand our military industrial base?
Well, Brian, we've done it. We've shown. We did it in World War II. We went literally from zero to being the arsenal of democracy. We did it during the Cold War. Again, you know, we went through after World War II a significant decrease in our military posture, and we had to increase it again to fight the Cold War. And your point is exactly right. I mean, this is big business for defense contractors, right? There are a lot of clients out there around the world who will pay for this. In fact, even the military aid we give, for example, to Israel, we give them $3.8 billion a year. Most of that $3.8 billion has to be spent on U.S. systems, U.S. weaponry, and it creates American jobs. So in a sense, it's almost like a off-balance sheet financing from the Pentagon. Israel gets its weapons, but we get the jobs. So this is we have to do it. If we don't do it, no one will do it. And I think our allies around the world are also recognizing they're very vulnerable to American pressure. If they're also not domesticating their own defense industry, I know the Israelis are thinking long and hard about that now. We mentioned the discussion about Hezbollah and how the Biden administration could use the threat of slowing down military resupply to prevent Israel from taking care of its most dangerous enemy on its northern border. You know, Israel needs to have its own ammunition, its own JDAMs, its own small diameter bombs, and be able to resupply itself. So that's certainly the case for Ukraine, for Taiwan, and our allies around the world. And again, we're either going to be the arsenal of democracy, or we're going to leave our allies vulnerable to these enemies, and therefore the homeland vulnerable to them as well.
Yeah, I just hope we understand that would be something to run on, and it doesn't have to be a partisan issue. You can run on this, explain it, and understand we need to do it because we have another country that is doing it themselves, and they don't wait for votes or approval polls. Lastly, Ukraine holding on. Forced the Russian Navy really out of Crimea. Some remarkable accomplishments. They are able to export their own grain, created their own corridor, holding strong. But where do you see this war right now?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, again, you've got a situation where the Biden administration has been dripping weapon systems into Ukraine, not giving the Ukrainians what they need to really fight the Russians and really inflict significant damage. Ukrainians have been fighting courageously the way the Israelis have been fighting courageously. But yet not getting what they need in order to win. And so what I fear is there's going to be a stalemate, and there's going to be immense pressure on Ukraine for a ceasefire, and there's going to have to become some kind of negotiated settlement with Putin, which will leave Putin standing and declaring victories. Sound familiar? That's exactly what's happening right now in Israel with Hamas and the Biden administration, right? There's this unwillingness to give our allies what they need, the political support and the military support, to inflict damage on America's enemies. It's not just their enemies, it's our enemies. And if we allow these stalemates to continue and these ceasefires, premature ceasefires to be imposed, that's just bad for U.S. national security.
Right. And so far, it's out of sight, out of mind. But Ukraine's in the fight every single day, and now they're in the middle of another brutal winter. How has the Russia economy recovered like it has?
It's recovered because the U.S. has been unwilling to really engage in serious financial warfare against the Russian economy. Also, we've been unwilling to enforce sanctions against those countries that have provided opportunities for massive sanctions busting for the Russians. So we haven't been serious. We haven't been serious about military warfare. We haven't been serious about financial warfare. And at the end of the day, the Ukrainians are fighting essentially alone against this Russian behemoth. And again, we got to be serious about using American power. If we're not serious about American power, America will no longer be a power.
Go get him. Mark, you do this every day. He's the CEO of Foundation for Democracies. Mark Dubowitz, thank you.
Brian, thanks so much for having me.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Also, sometime today, George Santos is going to find out if he's going to be expelled from Congress without being convicted of everything. As despicable of a guy he is, it's kind of a weird precedent to set, don't you think? Don't move.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
There's not been beheadings of babies and rapings. Israel murdered their own people on October 7th. They keep talking about Hamas, Hamas, Hamas. Our government does not fund Hamas. Our government funds Israel. Our government funds genocide. Our government funds killing of babies.
To hear them complain about Hamas violence is like listening to a wife beater complain when his wife finally stands up and fights back.
Calling Hamas a terrorist organization is ridiculous, racist, and plays into genocidal propaganda that is flooding our media and that we should be doing everything possible to combat.
I support the right of Palestinians to resist occupation, including through Hamas, the armed wing of the unified Palestinian resistance. Resistance to colonialism is not terrorism.
Is this unbelievable? This is in Oakland. They were voting to condemn the attacks on Hamas. They voted down 6-2. And these people were getting up saying that the Israelis actually made up or attacked their own people or it never happened, period. We thought the Holocaust denier was such a niche thing, like that's for a crazy Ayatollah in Iran. But now you see in 2 months, virtually 2 months, already people saying things didn't happen. Now there's video and Hamas posted it. Do you believe the perpetrators? It's like the SS. If they said, okay, not only did I do it, I filmed it and I'm bragging about it. It's where we got some of the films, I imagine. But these guys said we did it, and they're saying we didn't do it. Hamas go, no, I want the credit. And then we see the Fatah, which is his Palestinian Authority. They were bragging that they want credit for it because they showed up, too, when the fight started, and they killed people and kidnapped people. I don't think they kidnapped, but they just killed people. They were so proud of themselves. And yet you have people in Oakland swearing that this is not true because, I don't know, they read it on the Internet? Yeah, probably. Maybe TikTok. There's conspiracy theorists or influencers who said, yeah, by the way, this whole thing the government's telling you, not true. Nobody trusts anyone. But this was not a hard, this is not a big leap because the killers actually want the credit for killing. You don't even need a trial. They actually admitted to it once arrested. Some were detained, some were arrested, and they admitted exactly what they wanted to do. When asked, how far would you have gone? They said, we would kill as many people as possible for as long as we could be in that country. And they thought this was going to be a 20-minute operation and the IDF would be mobilized confronting them. Instead, they were in for hours without any confrontation on military bases. It's one of the biggest mysteries how they were able to pull this off. And that still has not been even close to investigated yet. But that's exactly what happened. So you see what Israel's up against? You're asking people to understand your point of view if they don't even believe what caused this military action and this military response. Colonialists. Do you know anything about how Israel got to be Israel? You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. Find out more on how to get Teddy and Booker T.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moment of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. 1-866-408-7669. Last night, you saw all those clowns, those protesters come into our building at 1211 6th Avenue. Didn't get in. We have great security, but they couldn't interrupt the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree lighting, so they decided to wreak havoc on the streets, all for the cause of Hamas and the Palestinians, a cause they didn't even know about, weren't even thinking about before the massacre on October 7th. This hour, we're going to talk to Senator Rick Scott about that. He wants 6 more years as senator in Florida. I got to talk to him about the big debate tonight with Sean Hannity hosting, moderating, I should say, between Gavin Newsom and Ron DeSantis. This should be awesome. And at 10:34, Bob Vanderplaats, the CEO of the family leader, one of the most influential people in Iowa, and he has thrown his support behind Ron DeSantis. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
They realize that this is a wire into what they said was a company with no known purpose, meaning it was a shell company or a fake company. The politically exposed person who owned the account was the son of the former vice president of the United States.
That is James Comer. More proof that when there's a name hunter, there's a lot of smoke and a lot of fire and a mysterious bank account. The latest activity, perhaps the most disturbing, we'll talk about it.
Number two.
Look, if Biden died tomorrow, and then what do they do with Kamala Harris? I think they have no cards, and they're looking at this game, and I don't know. I think they're depending upon party loyalty, and they're depending upon Trump getting convicted.
Well, Trump gets convicted, and he can't run, even though he can run. Nikki Haley beats him by 11. And so does Ron DeSantis, beats him in almost every poll. Biden spiraling, gaffing, but still running as it becomes clear an opportunity exists for Republicans to sweep every branch of government. The Hail Mary. for Democrats, demonize and institutionalize and arrest Donald Trump and let him bring the rest of the party down with him. Will that work?
Number one.
And so he's under pressure, and he doesn't want to alienate what has become, thanks to his own efforts, an important part of his constituency. So he seems to be kind of straddling supporting Israel and yet saying, now, but don't be too mean to the Palestinians. So I think that's where he is. I think he's kind of trapped here.
Pause remains on pause. More hostage releases lead Israel to keep the war on the sidelines another day. Hamas has released some more hostages today, as evidence grows that Biden is going mobbly in his support for Israel. That anti-Israel movement's hurting him politically, but he should just do the right thing, don't you think? That's what I think. So we are waiting to find out more information, but it looks like more hostages are coming out, and that's a good thing. You just heard me speak in a previous hour to Mark Dubowitz of Defense of Democracies. He believes that some of these hostages, sadly, have lost their life already. They've already passed away. But for the Israelis, they cannot stop short of a total annihilation of Hamas. And a lot of people are saying that it's going to drive the Arab base wild and all these democracies against them. But Israel has no choice. As random attacks continue to take place in almost every city, they moved out of the north, and a lot of them moved out of the south to get away from Hezbollah and Hamas. Total disruption. Derek Anderson, former Green Beret, was on with Trace Gallagher last night, Cut 3.
You know, we've seen some of the hostages that just have these grim faces staring the Hamas terrorists down. We see some of them pushing their hands away. We see some of the Hamas terrorists trying to carry the elderly out. That is their narrative they're trying to push right now. And as we're starting to get the counts, the recounts of all these hostages day by day, we're starting to see some of the terrible things that these Hamas terrorists did to these hostages while they were in captivity.
Yeah, and we're getting some of the accounts. And we heard about the kids kept in cages, women kept in cages. We heard about the kids being told you better not cry no matter what you see, no matter what you do. Told they can't speak above a whisper for the entire time. Still kids have not made that adjustment. Ben Domenech on the diminishing support for Israel in and around these countries and the support for the Palestinian side, which has no plan. The no two-state solution wants just to wipe out Israel, which isn't going to happen. Cut 11.
The latest NBC News poll shows that 70% of voters, 18 to 34, support the Palestinian side in this situation, the Gaza side of this situation, not Israel. And what the most important thing that Chuck Schumer said today, I thought, was his acknowledgement that for so long he's been targeting, you know, neo-Nazis, Klan members, et cetera, on things he views as coming from the right. But he said that, you know, for many of us, we feel like as liberal Jews, there are people who are fellow travelers with us politically for many years who are betraying us at this moment. I think that's the most honest thing I've heard from a Democrat on this issue, really, since it became prominent here in Washington.
I was waiting for Chuck Schumer to do more. As he said yesterday, he's the most prominent, high-ranking Jewish official in maybe in America right now, no doubt, and maybe ever. And he took forever to come, 50-plus days, to say much officially, even though he traveled there and does voice support. But he finally gave a 40-minute speech. And how odd is this? 18 to 34s, you just heard the stats, don't agree with Chuck Schumer. They were Democratic voters. The squad, which is a lot bigger than ever before, and their voice is not as isolated as it used to be, disagrees with them. The bulk of Columbia University, a liberal bastion, student body, disagrees with them. University of Pennsylvania, Harvard, Yale, disagrees with them. They disagree with what Joe Biden's doing. These are the same, you know, Ben Cardin, Chuck Schumer, a couple other senators, and Menendez, all didn't want the nuclear deal with Iran. They said this is a problem. It's going to be a problem for Israel. We should not be voting to support this nuclear deal that Barack Obama drew up. It's terrible. Not many people know that. The reason why Trump was able to turn it over, tear it up, is because they never passed it as a treaty, because more people disapproved it in the Senate than approved, including Democratic voters. That's what makes this thing, it makes you think. It's not, well, Democrats think this, Republicans think that. Not now. So this guy who's in charge of Hamas was in jail for 20 years. He is actually, this Gaza leader was confronted by Yavshin Lifshitz. This is according to an Israeli newspaper. He went up to the CEO of Hamas, that evil terror organization, and she's 85 years old. She told the Israeli newspaper, Devar, that Yahya Sinwar paid the hostage a visit. and was with us 3 to 4 days after we arrived. This according to Reuters. She said, quote, I asked him how he is not ashamed to do such a thing to the people who all these years have supported peace. He didn't answer. He was silent. And what does she mean? I can't tell you the inside of every kibbutz in Israel, obviously. But evidently, that's an extremely left-wing area that has all these missions into Gaza to help out. We'll push for peace and wanted them to get additional rights and to let down some of the border security that was hurting their prosperity. When the people hurting their prosperity was actually Hamas using their money for weapons instead of roads and bridges and lifestyle and hotels to bring people in. So that's interesting that this guy who was in jail for 20 years is right there. And that's why the Israelis got to go back. He's there. Now, yesterday, the pro-Palestinian protesters carrying swastikas swarmed Midtown. They could not get to the Christmas tree lighting, but they could get here. The NYPD cops said they were chanting river to the sea, which means wipe out Israel and just force them into the ocean where they all drown. They were waving Palestinian flags and signs calling for the end of end to genocide. Really? You know what happened October 7th? The protests have been taking shape outside of the News Corp building, the one I'm in right now in Midtown Manhattan, spiraled into chaos. But I walked in this morning, a lot of bike racks, bike rack barkings. But there was no damage. We had to go into the side door, not the revolving door, but they did not accomplish their goal. And I'm happy about that. The other thing is important to bring up in New York City is because of these protests and the overtime for the NYPD and the disbanding of two or three academies that were not full of rookie cops. They were going to go through the academy training. They now, because of these illegal immigrants and some of these, the money that costs for overtime to handle some of these protests, we can't keep libraries open on Sunday. We now have to revisit how many cops and firefighters that we have, and we're cutting people from the Health and Human Services. That's what's got to be done. When we come back, Senator Rick Scott's going to be in here. Tell me what's happening on Capitol Hill. First and foremost, I'm going to ask him about the aid package, about Taiwan or Israel, as well as Ukraine, the chance of that passing. And what they exactly need at the border in that package to get it signed and done and our allies armed before Christmas. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Do you believe a Chinese-owned social media platform, which virtually everybody in the country is now looking at on a daily basis, if not an hourly basis, needs to be regulated or in some states, as you know, they're trying to ban it completely?
I think we should take very seriously the fact that not only individuals but nation states take very significant measures to undermine the democracy of the United States of America.
And the view on the social media piece, though, you don't have a specific view on TikTok itself.
I'm not commenting.
She will not disassociate herself with TikTok. And you know why? Because most young people are on it. They wanted to be voters. Instead, they're going to pay for influencers to start getting their message across how great the economy is, how great their foreign policy is. And they'll sit down for interviews with people with nose rings and no shoes and hiked up pants and purple hair. That's what we watched. We watched Barack Obama do it. So how do you ban TikTok, even though it's right for the country, at the same time buying time on TikTok? Senator Rick Scott has no doubt about it. We should ban it. Homeland Security and Armed Services Committee members going for another term in office. Senator, what's your stance on her lack of stance?
Why do they let her do interviews? I mean, that's what I always wonder. I mean, of course she's not going to take a position because she wants to be, you know, she wants to be for everything. The Barack Obama approach, he's for everything. So he's for Hamas, he's for Israel, he's for everybody. But TikTok, it's toxic. It's toxic to our kids. It's toxic to our society. Ban it. Get rid of it. I mean, this is just pure propaganda by the Chinese Party of Communist China. So get rid of it. It's real simple.
How strong is that lobby?
Oh gosh, you wouldn't believe the Chinese lobby. I mean, I've been up here 5 years, and as you said, I'm running for re-election. The with the Chinese lobby, and you look at stuff that is so simple that you're trying to get past, and you think, how could anybody be against this? But they are. I mean, we've been working on stuff to say, you know, just disclose if you invest in China, right? We want to know if you have money tied up in China. Maybe we know then you have a conflict of interest, and they fight that. I mean, it's you wouldn't believe everything I'm trying to do to hold China, the Communist Party of China, accountable is just a fight. The dollars they're spending on lobbyists. And so, and they get, you know, they'll get somebody to try to, you know, help them over, you know, somewhere in the House or the Senate. So it makes it hard.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So President, believe it or not, it looks like Joe Biden is going to go for another 4 years. Before we talk about him, I want to talk about tonight. Governor DeSantis, I know you two aren't great friends, against Governor Gavin Newsom. It's hard debating a Republican when you agree with 80% of what they stand for, most of them. You know, 85%, maybe 90, and then yet you got to get the nomination to go against them when you're going for that primary, and that's what they're in right now. How different is it in a situation like this, where the person across from you really disagrees with almost everything you do?
Oh, it should be—it's a piece of cake. I mean, I've done debates in my races, and what you do is you just explain to people in common sense terms. If you like it, high inflation, then you should vote for the Democrat. If you like high mortgage rates and high, you know, interest rates on your car or your credit card rates, you should vote for the Democrats. If you want higher crime, hey, they're all in. If you like open borders, they're there. If you like fentanyl deaths, I mean, Newsom, they're all in. Because they're all the same. They vote in block. They all just voted in block, Brian, against Israel aid. In block. Every Democrat in the Senate voted against aid for Israel. I mean, it's fascinating. So, oh, no, Newsom would be great to debate because, you know, he's the opposite of what I don't know what he believes in that I believe in.
A couple of other thing is, speaking yesterday was President Biden. Listen to him in Pueblo, Colorado, trying to go to bat for a Bidenomics, cut 13.
We could use it to strengthen the Social Security and Medicare system instead of cutting them, or like Congressman Trump and Bob would want to do. We could use it to help millionaires, millions of families afford, instead of millionaires, millions of families afford a little help with senior care.
I mean, did he not get his adrenaline? A Congressman Trump? Boebert? What is he even talking about?
First off, that was it last year? Yeah, I think it was last year. The Biden and all the Democrats passed legislation to cut billions of dollars out of Medicare, billions of dollars. When he was in the Senate, he proposed cutting Medicare and Social Security. I mean, he'll lie about anything, but people see it. The job market's tough. Right? They act like, oh, the unemployment's rate low. Go try to find a good full-time, good-paying job. It's not easy. There's plenty of part-time jobs out there, but good full-time jobs, it's hard. And look at this inflation. If something costs you $100 a day, Biden got elected, it'll cost you $118 today. And if you wanted to buy a $500,000 house the day before Biden took office, and you want to have the same monthly payment, you'll buy less than $200,000 house today. That's why people are mad. They're mad about what Biden has done.
And yet he's bragging about it. And we saw Jamie Dimon say the other day, don't be surprised if interest rates go up more. What does that do to the credit card? What does it do if you're carrying a balance? What does that do if you want to sell your home? You say, I'm not going to leave my 2% mortgage for a 7% mortgage or an 8% mortgage. It makes no sense. It freezes everything. You're a money guy. You're a business guy. How do you get out of this?
Balance the budget. It's real simple. When I walked in as governor of Florida, Florida was in an economic collapse. We were not living within our means ever. We hadn't balanced the budget in years. We were going into default on our debt. We balanced the budget. We said, this is how much we're going to collect. This is what we're going to spend. It's not that hard. Most people have to do it in their personal life. Most companies have to do it or they'll be out of business. This federal government's got to do the same thing. Think about this, Brian. In the last 5 years, the population of the country has gone up 1.8%. The budget, Biden's budget, will be up 55%. 55%. I mean, they're throwing money at everything. You see the Wall Street Journal article about the $400 billion slush fund for Green New Deal stuff that one guy gets to allocate out? $400 billion of your money. They just throw out there. I mean, this is this.
Well,
this
I mean,
is
how
why.
Do you how do you make sense of that? Where'd they get that money?
I mean, the Democrats voted for it. And the Democrats voted for it, and they did it as part of the, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act. Okay. Yeah, right. Has reduced inflation, or the infrastructure bill, which had nothing to do with infrastructure. They have nice titles. So that's where they get all this money. They're spending. You wouldn't believe just the way money is wasted up here. So think about this, Brian. How can interest rates go down if they have to sell another $2 trillion of treasuries a year, which is what they have to do? We're running almost $2 trillion deficit. That means they got to get somebody to go out and pay more money or buy more of these treasuries. So you think interest rates are going to go down if they have to do that? Where do they find these buyers? Yeah. You know, Chinese aren't buying it. Russians aren't buying it. Iranians aren't buying it.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to find somebody. That's a lot of money. That's
crazy. Senator Rick Scott running for another term in office in Florida. And right now he has no opponent and obviously no Republican challenger.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
So if it comes down to Trump and Biden, which it most likely will, you're going to vote for Trump then?
Hey, I'm a Republican.
Okay, so you will vote for Trump. Okay.
It's not going to be Trump and Biden, I'm telling you. So,
you
so
think
here's
it'll be another Republican and Biden?
I will say this, and I mean this quite sincerely. The party that chooses to move on from Trump or Biden first wins. If the Democrats choose before the Republicans to move on from Biden, before the Republicans choose to move on from Trump, Democrats will win. America is just looking for something new, so a new generation, enough of this old school crap. We need to move forward. And so any new candidate on either side is going to win this election.
That is Governor Sununu, and he never thought that Trump would get the nomination. Right now, he hasn't gotten anything, but he's primed to take it, and no one's within 20 points. But it's all going to come down to Iowa. If Ron DeSantis is strong in Iowa, he gets momentum going into to New Hampshire. If he doesn't, then it's hard to see how he survives. And Nikki Haley seems to be picking up a lot of money and hopes to, by attacking DeSantis, be the last one standing. Bob Vanderplant knows all the plots, knows all this. He's the president and CEO of the Family Leader. It didn't stop him from choosing the Florida governor to endorse. Bob, welcome back.
Oh, Brian, good to be on your show. It's been a while.
I know. I mean, I got to get over to Iowa and see some of the intensity on the ground and see some Iowans and find about the deliberative process. To see those caucuses in action was really educational for me. But Bob,
okay, we'd love
ahead.
To have you.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, first off, how organized are you when you guys looked around and seeing how the caucuses are coming out? We know the Democrats were a mess last time. They couldn't even get I don't even think they ever picked a winner. What about the Republicans?
Well, the Republicans will have their game on. They're ready for the caucuses. They've done this before. When the votes come in, you'll be able to trust the votes here in the state of Iowa.
So what went into you picking Governor DeSantis? I know you you know him well.
Yeah, well, I know him well, but my big thing is I really believe I'm one of those guys who believes it's time to turn the page, time to turn the page to the next generation leader. This is not a vote against Trump. It's a vote for the future of the country. And really, Ron DeSantis is kind of his endorsement to lose from early on, how he's led in the state of Florida. He's been a bold and courageous leader without us trying to push him to be a bold and courageous leader. He took a toss-up state. He won it decisively, won in demographics we rarely win in. And he just makes it clear. He can win. He can lead on day one. He can lead for two terms. He can be focused on defending this country versus defending himself. And to me, that was key. He made that argument at our Thanksgiving family forum. And that kind of sealed the deal for me.
He did. He made, I think he's one of the few candidates ever outside. Senator Grassley does it all the time, to go to all 99 Iowa counties. That matters a lot to you.
It matters a ton to me, and it matters a ton to Iowans, because what he's saying is I'm not taking anything for granted. I'm going to go to every Casey's General Store, Hy-Vee Grocery Store, whatever it is. But I'm going to visit with you. I'm going to be accessible. And so we're going to celebrate his 99th county on Saturday in Jasper County. Governor Kim Reynolds and I will be speaking at that along with Casey and Governor DeSantis.
When you look at Iowa, though, it's still Trump's at, what, 49%? It's still got a substantial lead. What should we know about that with all your years of experience about Iowa and the caucus system?
Well, first of all, as you know, Brian, Iowa always breaks late. it broke late for Huckabee in 08, Santorum in 12, and Cruz in 16. But the other thing I'd say in the polling I'm looking at is that Trump's like in the low 40s, like at 42% in the state of Iowa. And when you're a former Republican president in the Iowa caucus, that's not a great day. And I think that's his high watermark here. I think it's going to be more like 37, which means you got 63%. So, and DeSantis is way better organized and structured in the state of Iowa for a caucus ground game than, say, Ted Cruz ever was, or Mike Huckabee ever was, or Rick Santorum ever was. So I think caucus night, DeSantis is tailor-made to upend the former president here.
So what do you like about his team? What worried you about his team? You said it was his endorsement to lose. So did you see enough? Because you've heard they lost some major donors. So what do you like about his team? What needs to change? I remember Jim Clyburn said, I'm going to endorse President Biden if he straightens out his team. He had a bad team. He bombed in Iowa, bombed in New Hampshire. So what did you notice, and what should we know?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's nothing that I didn't like. He did everything right. He came in, and he worked exceptionally hard. He did Iowa the right way. He's got over 40 state legislative endorsements. He's got the historic endorsement of Governor Kim Reynolds, who's one of the most popular governors in the country, and the most popular governor of my lifetime in the state of Iowa. He's got all the key endorsement. He's got all the key factors. He's got 120 county chairs for 99 counties. He's got the precincts covered. And his message is resonating. And I think what it is, people just need to be assured that it's okay not to vote for Trump and vote for DeSantis. That doesn't mean you're betraying Trump. That means you're looking out for the future of this country, your kids and your grandkids.
That would be every message for almost every candidate. So what's the last time, Bob, I'm talking to Bob Vanderplaats, what's the last time you lost after your endorsement?
I'm 3-0. But it's not necessarily my endorsement. I mean, I always tell people my endorsement's worth one vote. But what I try to do is make sure my endorsement sticks. Our base is very influential here. I think that the Iowa caucus electorate will be like 64%. Evangelical Christian. These people take time out of their night on a cold night in the middle of January to discuss with their neighbors who they should vote for. They take it very, very serious. And I see that kind of commitment and energy with the DeSantis people on the ground.
Also, what does Governor Reynolds' endorsement do as well? She also endorsed Ron DeSantis.
It's huge. And what she's saying, too, I mean, and she was a big supporter and proponent of Donald Trump. I still consider Donald Trump a friend. He always doesn't like what I do or what I say, but I still consider him a friend. But what she's saying too, she goes, this isn't against Donald Trump. This is about, we need someone who can lead and lead for two terms, someone who can defend this country versus defend themselves, and someone who's got a history of taking on the woke agenda, taking on woke corporations, as well as standing up for the values that we hold dear. And DeSantis has done it. If I was an NBA coach and he was an NBA player, he'd be my top pick, and that's why we went with him.
So when you look at the Trump's track record among evangelicals, you know, he might not be the traditional religious candidate that you often heard. You heard that a lot from George W. Bush. But in terms of track record, evangelicals, he's produced for you guys, right?
Yeah, but he's not the same guy, Brian. He produced by giving us three judges, which led to the overturn of Roe v. Wade. We give him credit for that. But then he throws pro-lifers under the bus for the midterm elections, says the heartbeat bill was too harsh. He wants to make a deal on the sanctity of human life. He can't define what a woman is. There's a lot of things today that he's just done. Are we into principle or are we into personality? If we're into principle, I think you're going to vote with Ron DeSantis. If you're into personality, yeah, you're going to vote Donald Trump.
So when you say he's not the same guy, you should say, but he's also seeing the results of these elections. And you could be, if you're the most pro-life person in the world, you're not winning in a lot of these battleground states.
Well, you take a look at those. That Governor Reynolds, who signed a heartbeat bill, Governor DeSantis, who signed a heartbeat bill, they won, and they won in landslides. Why? Because they led with authenticity. And they led with a compassionate voice for the mom, for the dad that's involved, the community that's involved, and people trusted them. What they don't trust is when you're trying to nuance and get talking points on the life issue. people respect where you're at, but they don't want you to be making up games on messaging. And I think where Trump is saying to Caitlin Collins on CNN, we're going to make a deal that everybody's going to be happy with, that makes everybody more than nervous on that issue.
And have you talked to Trump since you made your endorsement?
No, I haven't. Now, he's talked to me through the media because he's not happy with my endorsement. But first of all, I mean, they said, you know, my endorsement doesn't matter, and it may not matter because I tell them it's worth one vote. But I think what it shows is that he's very concerned about my endorsement. He's very concerned about Kim Reynolds' endorsement. I think his team and he also see what's happening on the ground in the state of Iowa. And Governor DeSantis knows that Iowa's ground zero. If you upend Trump here or if you come in a close second to him here, I think it's game on to the nomination. It's a two-person race. If Trump wins by 20, 30 points, it'll be a hard sell for anybody to say, well, we're going to move on. I think Trump then just steamrolls to the nomination.
How active has Trump been in Iowa?
He's been very – I mean, he's really picked up steam by coming here more and more. Now, the venues are smaller. They'll be packed, but they're small venues. He's up on advertising in Iowa. I think he knows that he could be in danger of losing here. Remember, he was supposed to beat Cruz here by 5 points, and Cruz beat him by 4. That's a 9-point turnaround. This time there's more ground to make up, but there's less candidates, and I think there's more open sky to make that happen.
Are you going to be watching tonight on Fox, Sean Hannity, 9 to 10:30?
Yeah. I think it's a crucial debate. And as a matter of fact, I think a lot of Iowans who are going to participate in the caucuses are going to watch that. And the reason is it's going to be a tale of two states, California and Florida, a tale of two governors. And I think and I hope that people will be able to see this is what it's going to take to not only beat the Democrats in 2024, but how do you lead and make America look a whole lot more like Florida than like California?
And Ron DeSantis, if you do your opposition research, should be fine. He's got a stronger hand. I think even Democrats will tell you that. But it's very interesting to see if a debate, the big difference between a primary debate, where everyone agrees on maybe 80% of the things, maybe more, as opposed to they probably agree on 20%. So this could
right.
be really interesting. But you could also get caught. Also get caught if you're not prepared to understand what Gavin Newsom's strengths are, and if Newsom doesn't understand ahead of time what Governor DeSantis has.
Yeah, you know, and I think for both of them, Newsom and for DeSantis, this is kind of their natural habitat. They like having a debate. Newsom, because he's very slick and he's a salesman, but he's really operating on a house of cards, so to speak. Where DeSantis, he's very knowledgeable, he's very articulate, he's intellectual, but he's operating off of a firm foundation. These are things that have been true for a long time. These are timeless truths, and they're showing to work in Florida. And as people flee California, they're running into the state of Florida. I think that's enough. I mean, that would be enough said for me where he could just drop the mic and exit the stage.
All right, and we'll see. We've got the holiday break. It's over. Thanksgiving's over. A sprint to Christmas, a slight pause, and then in January, we finally get this thing underway. A week later, it's New Hampshire. Next thing you know, it's South Carolina, Nevada, and we have a Super Tuesday, and it all starts in Iowa. Bob Vanderplaats, thanks so much, Bob. Great to hear from you.
Oh, Brian, really appreciate it. God bless you, man.
Back at you. 1-866-408-7669. I see all the calls up there. I'll go through them rapidly when we get back. I have not touched the Hunter story yet. You're not going to believe this. Don't move.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The bank did what it was supposed to do. The compliance officer caught it. They realized that this is a wire into what they said was a company with no known purpose, meaning it was a shell company or a fake company. And they were concerned because the politically exposed person who owned the account was the son of the former vice president of the United States. They knew through press accounts and through his ex-wife's testimony and interviews that he had a drug problem, that he was in financial trouble. So they knew that he was compromised. They knew that China did this. This is the way that China bought influence.
And we found out that they had a program to target the kids of U.S. officials. And guess what? Hunter was right for the picking, his vice president dad. So get this. They found out in 2018 a bank investigator responsible for detecting and combating money laundering warned of unusual and erratic activity related to more than a dozen wire transfers of large sums of money to accounts belonging to, drumroll please, Hunter Biden. I'm not saying a Republican. I am saying that money laundering investigators. So in an email released by the House Oversight Committee yesterday, a Bank Secrecy Act manager raised question concerns that the payments did not appear to correspond to, quote, any services rendered, close quote, as well as Chinese efforts to target children of politicians. The investigator suggested the bank reevaluate the relationship with the client. The payments from the China ultimately funded a $40,000 payment to Joe Biden from his brother that had been labeled loan repayment. According to the Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer, Comer is co-leading the impeachment, as you know. So get this. In one of these emails that they uncovered, his ex-wife voiced concerns about Hunter's spending. Says Hunter's $1.5 billion deal with a Chinese equity firm. The equity firm's purpose, to invest in companies that benefit the Chinese government. Really? Activity on the account was unusual because there is no current business purpose. Nothing I told you now was from a Republican. Those were from investigations when a Republican was in the White House, yes, but it had nothing to do with any investigation, right, that was existing right now to do with William Barr or anyone else. Chris, listen to WDBO in Orlando. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Brian. Real quickly, I want to make a quick point. As a Florida voter, Ron DeSantis, when he won re-election, we had legislation in place that allowed a woman's choice to 15 weeks. And respectfully, after he won his election, he then changed to a more conservative stance and signed into law a five-week ban. And he hasn't faced the voters since then. So I think he's going to struggle with that in a general election, as much as I respect and appreciate him. I think that that was to go get that specific donor.
And just let everybody know, Chris, if they're just tuning in, Bob Vanderplaat said he won this vote easily with 6 weeks. He didn't. He won it with 15 weeks because you're right. Marco Rubio said, I'm pro-life, but Florida isn't. Or everybody in Florida isn't. So I'm going to leave it at 15 weeks, and that helped him win. And then Governor DeSantis got all his legislation passed in Florida, and one of which was 6 weeks. So go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, and I think, you know, ultimately I believe that as a conservative and as a party, a Republican party, we've got to stop losing other places and have an understanding that you can be pro-life and pro-choice. And after 15 weeks, then I would start to talk about it being abortion. But up to that point in time, it's more of a specific choice for a woman. And 80-90% of women, regardless of what side they sit on, and the majority of independents and moderates are going to agree with that stance. So if we want to win on the border, we want to win on foreign policy, we want to win on taxation, then we have to kind of come to an understanding. And they always say, we can't do it federally. Well, it's just a party agreement. I'm not saying you put it in legislatively, leave it to the states, but have an understanding right. That this is where we should be.
This is the one message I like. You know, and it's not a catchphrase, it's fact. They say, can we agree when the baby feels pain? Who out there is going to go, no, I don't think so. I don't mind the baby feels pain. So when that week, I think, is 12 or 15 weeks. Thanks so much, Chris. It makes a lot of sense. Alex over in Brooklyn. Hey, Alex. Alex, big debate tonight. All right, we're going to fix that. But this debate tonight is going to be interesting. However, Ron DeSantis has got a great opportunity. If he looks strong, he looks young, he looks spry, he looks quick, he looks happy, confident, like he always usually does. Takes on Gavin Newsom, who's about an inch thick in terms of knowing policy, but can use a catchphrase, hit you with some numbers you might not be able to follow up on, but stick on homeless. Stick on the fact that your state is on a shortfall and there's a huge surplus in Florida. Stick on the zero taxes, state taxes in Florida. Look on how many people have come to Florida and how many people have left in California. And then understand what he's going to say that he has going for him.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm really glad you're here and you weren't storming the building last night. It was just amazing. These pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas protesters making a scene on every major event. And if you have a major event in your city, expect for them to show up through social media. They don't need posters. They communicate and they swarm, and these cops have to quickly be overwhelmed. And you add to that everyone with a camera waiting for a cop to get a little rough. I'm actually waiting for a cop to get a little rough on camera. I will praise them. Brett Tolman is standing by, and Mark Thiessen at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk about some of the stakes in 2024. But right now, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
They realize that this is a wire into what they said was a company with no known purpose, meaning it was a shell company or a fake company. The politically exposed person who owned the account was the son of the former vice president of the United States.
This is getting crazy. And it's these are some reports from 5 years ago about what Hunter Biden was up to. More proof with the name Hunter's involved. There's fire, there's smoke, and a mysterious bank account. The latest activity coming your way.
Number two.
Look, if Biden died tomorrow, and then what do they do with Kamala Harris? Okay. I think they have no cards. And they're looking at this game, and I don't know. I think they're depending upon party loyalty, and they're depending upon Trump getting convicted.
They are, and Joe Rogan once again is right. 2024, Biden spiraling, gaffing, but still running as it becomes clear an opportunity exists for a Republican sweep of every branch of government. The Hail Mary, demonize, institutionalize, jail Donald Trump, and let him bring the rest of the party down. Will that work?
Number one.
And so he's under pressure. And he doesn't want to alienate what has become, thanks to his own efforts, an important part of his constituency. So he seems to be kind of straddling supporting Israel and yet saying now, but don't be too mean to the Palestinians. So I think that's where he is. I think he's kind of trapped here.
Pause remains on pause. More hostage releases will extend this at least one other day and keep Israel's war machine on ice. As evidence grows that President Biden is going wobbly with his support. Let's bring in Brett Tolman now, former federal prosecutor, former counsel to the Senate Judiciary Committee, and former U.S. attorney. Brett, welcome.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be with you.
Well, we got a lot to discuss, some various topics. First off, when Joe Rogan speaks, I tend to listen. He just speaks, and just tactically,
likewise,
he's 100% right. And when you look at what he was just saying and just on the tactics, I'll bring you to politics. At the same time, I'll bring you into what the Democrats are already doing, and that is vilify and possibly jail Donald Trump. Here is Joe Rogan.
Look, if Biden died tomorrow, and then what do they do with Kamala Harris? They're going to put her on the moon? Like, what are they going to do? She's the vice president. I think they have no cards, and they're looking at this game, and I don't know. I think they're depending upon party loyalty, and they're depending upon Trump getting convicted and arrested. I mean, imprisoned, rather. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't think it is. It doesn't seem to. It seems like it's a bunch of trumped up charges. No pun intended.
And on top of that, we find out, you know, we know the civil case is going on. The president's going to be going on the stand next week. We know he's already been found guilty of fraud to a judge. And they want to line up this case first civilly for an appeal, immediate appeal, and stay the order. So you have to write the check. Eric's going to go up again for the defense. Can I bring you to the civil trial and what we can expect? And why do you think Trump is still going every day?
Yeah, you know, Brian, there's so many layers of what's going on. We're watching, you know, Joe Rogan is absolutely right that the cards they seem to be holding is really just one card, and that is take down Trump, do whatever is necessary to take down Trump. Because they know that he is gaining in support, and they've got to see it through to the end. They never really seem to have stopped and thought through this strategy. The civil case that you watch President Trump and what he's doing, and it makes sense to me in a way that he is wanting to actually be there every day, and he is wanting to increase the attention to the narrative that this is the only cards they're trying to play. They're trying to take him down. They're using multiple actions, criminal and civil, in order to do so. And this civil case is his first ability to kind of jump in there in a somewhat safe safe case to take the stand, to make representations. It's very gray, the theory that they're working under. So it makes sense to me that he's doing that, because I think he's calculated that it's going to backfire. All of this effort to put him in prison is going to backfire in terms of his popularity and what will happen at the election. If that ends up being true, you know, they will have themselves to blame that they had no back, they had no plan, and their only card they were going to play was go after Donald Trump.
So now Jack Smith is at it. He is going after Trump big time. Do you know what he's doing now? The Department of Justice released a redacted subpoena for the President Trump's account on Twitter. And the special counsel Smith is investigating to find out who followed him, who liked him, find his list of Twitter users who have favorited or retweeted posts by Trump, as well as all tweets that include the username associated with the Trump account. He also is going to look at replies. He's flipped his lawyers, cut deals with his chief of staff. What's going on here?
Yeah, you know, Jack Smith is at a position, you know, what he's got is he's got to try to change that case in some ways, the optics on the case. He's got to paint it as actually Donald Trump fueling insurrection. Not because he charged that, but because that's the narrative they need out there in order to, you know, pursue eliminating him as a viable candidate. It's bizarre to me that he is going to this effort. The charges that he brought, he either has that evidence already or not. He presented it to the grand jury. So the fact that he is continuing to pursue and now expanding that, I think it's to try to reframe the narrative that despite Donald Trump saying, you know, go to the Capitol but be peaceful, I think he's trying to combat that real fatal, potentially fatal flaw in his case.
But what the aggression as opposed to what's going after Joe Biden, a quiet investigation with zero leaks, and they're going to announce that he had some egregious behavior but nothing charged. It's almost, it seems, according to the leaks, that they're going to go up and look at his years of holding on to classified documents. I'm talking about the current president. As bad, but we're not going to charge him. Robert Hur, how do you explain the different approaches here?
Yeah, we're again, it's almost like revisiting Jim Comey making the argument that no reasonable prosecutor would go after Hillary Clinton. In their view, a reasonable prosecutor targets a political foe and targets the narrative that they don't like and that they want to upset. There's no question that we have seen abuse of the FISA rules, the manipulation of the FISA court. We've seen abuse of subpoena power. We've seen abuse of criminal investigations, all targeting either Donald Trump or conservatives. And now they have to be consistent. So they're not going to target Hillary Clinton. They're not going to target Joe Biden. They're not going to target Hunter Biden. The same side of the other coin. It's the same other side of the same coin.
I want you to hear what Mike Davis said, Article 3 Project founder, who's been looking at this case and knows it's coming up in Washington, D.C., and he also knows the makeup of the likely jury. Cut 22.
There's no chance that President Trump is going to get a fair trial in D.C. She supervised the grand jury proceedings. She railroaded him, as we discussed, by making his attorney turn over notes. She threatened Twitter and said that if Twitter couldn't even tell Trump that Jack Smith was getting his records because he was supposedly a flight risk, like he was going to escape from, Trump was going to escape from his Secret Service protection, she fined Twitter $350,000, $7,000 an hour for being 51 hours late in responding to a subpoena by Jack Smith, signed by her for millions of pages of records. She is a partisan activist, and the Supreme Court needs to actually do its job and correct this.
How would the Supreme Court get involved with that? Is that illogical?
Yeah, so look, I agree with Mike's comments, but to back it up, I was one very early on that predicted that Donald Trump would be convicted on the D.C. case. You have the wrong kind of judge. You have the jury's a problem. You have the prosecutor that's manipulated the statutes in order to bring the case. So I think his only, you know, chance at getting this in front of the Supreme Court is going to be an appeal after conviction, and probably while he's sitting in jail. He'll be running for office and appealing his conviction and try to take it, you know, from the D.C. federal district court up to the circuit and then to the Supreme Court.
While in jail. So he gets convicted in this jury. He doesn't get out on appeal.
Well, there's an authority, and I believe this judge will exercise that authority that's granted to district court judges to actually take an individual in upon conviction and incarcerate them awaiting sentencing. And it's rare, but it happens, and they do have the authority to do it. And you know, I'd be hard pressed to believe someone that argues that she's not going to do that.
Wow, that would be something, Brett. Most people didn't think that he'd do it, house arrest or whatever, limit him, leave him in court, but not that. So interesting. The other thing with Hunter Biden, real quick, you have somebody now that wanted to testify publicly. James Comer says, no, I don't need that. We want you behind closed doors first. Then we'll decide what we're going to do. Why?
Yeah, I think they don't want it to be a circus, to be taken over by, you know, the left, and you know, we've all seen sort of how those hearings unfold. So I think what he's trying to do is very similar to what we do when hearings are held on classified or sensitive material, to do it in a closed session, so that it's productive, so that the questions are sincere, and they get to the bottom of, you know, the issues that they're looking into. I think it's probably the right move, but I also like transparency, and I'm not sure how well, you know, Hunter Biden would do on you know, being a witness in one of these hearings.
So I will say this: investigator was suggesting that in 2018, an investigator looking into erratic bank activity stumbled on, guess who, Hunter Biden, for unusual and erratic activity to more than a dozen or more wire transfers, large sums of money to accounts belonging to Hunter Biden. In an email released by the House Oversight Committee of Banking Secrecy Act, manager raised concerns that the payments did not appear to correspond with, quote, any services rendered, as well as Chinese efforts to target children of politicians. He obviously would fit that ballot. So then I looked at the actual email this morning, and I thought this was interesting. His ex-wife voiced concerns about his spending and cited Hunter got a $1.5 billion deal with a Chinese equity firm. The equity firm's purpose, according to this letter, was to invest in companies that benefit the Chinese government. Activity on the account's unusual because there's no current business purpose. I'm giving you, this is what's out there now. Tell me this is partisan. When you read this, do you see Republican or Democrat?
Yeah, this is meat and potatoes corruption. And it's not just the layers of fraud, and it's now bank fraud. It's money laundering. It's wire and mail fraud. It's all of those things. But you now have an element of national security concerns that a dummy corporation was receiving, you know, financial benefit that benefited the Biden family, and that the purpose for was to assist the Chinese government. And that is absolutely a betrayal of your oath of office as vice president. You know, they are supposed to be on guard against foreign or domestic, you know, breaches and potential enemies to this country. And I can't think of any other case that right. is more meat and potatoes case of corruption.
So they're trying to isolate it. By the way, it looks like Abby Lowe does not care about the White House. He's doing his own thing for his client. I have no idea how he can afford to pay him. He can't pay child support, but he can pay Abby Lowe. It's just crazy. Jerry Nadler.
Might be paintings.
That's true. My fault. I should have brought that up. Jerry Nadler called Hunter a disturbed man who may not have well done improper things. Jamie Raskin came out and said did a lot of really unlawful and wrong things. What is the tactic there for Democrats to start throwing Hunter under the bus?
Yeah, it appears they're going to paint him as, you know, in an attempt to try to separate him and gain some sympathy for him, that this is really just a troubled individual that was making really bad decisions while he's on drugs. And therefore, you know, let's see it in that light as opposed to a conscious effort by someone to manipulate the office of the vice president's the access to the vice president and utilize his name to try to ingratiate themselves to foreign corrupt governments to get money without having to provide any services. I mean, the apologies are going to come out and the narrative is going to start to shift and change as they try to paint Hunter Biden in a more sympathetical, you know, manner. And we need to resist it. An accurate media would be jumping on this, not political partisans, not right or left. It would be like you, Brian, just exposing this and saying, hey, American people, you decide. This is what is now known about what happened.
Got it. Brett, appreciate it. Took you through the gamut, and you're ready for the challenge. I appreciate it. Brett Thoman, thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, when we come back, I'll take your calls. I see you up there. Then I'm going to squeeze in Mark Thiessen. A great story. Do you realize who's paying for Ukraine? They are. I'll tell you about it. Don't move.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
All right, let's try to get to the phones right now. Then we got Mark Thiessen on the other side. Let's go out to Rob in Virginia. Hey, Rob.
Hello. Yeah, I just wanted to say everybody is so confused and wondering why people stick with Trump. And I'll tell you, it's really simple. Donald Trump is the only candidate I can remember ever. And I was a little too young to understand anything about Reagan. But the only one I've ever seen willing to take the beating he's taken and keep moving forward. He doesn't apologize. He doesn't step back. He doesn't go on the news begging for forgiveness. And also, I hear these Republicans tell us how horrible the FBI and the Justice Department and how two-tiered they are. They don't have they have the power to do things to them, like they could at least try to defund them. They didn't have to award them with this new great big office they're getting ready to get. It's like, man, Donald Trump is it. There's no one else.
Well, as you know, the FBI plays a vital role in law enforcement, 35,000. I think, Rob, where I agree with you is you got to get a new director in there. No one has faith in him. Nobody except Chris Christie. I don't believe he's ever telling the truth. I think he covers for his people. He's looking to survive. And I'm not interested in that. I want somebody that's willing to lose the job and the confidence of the people in order to win over the confidence of the people in the field. And I think it's the seventh floor they talk about where all the FBI heads are. Chris Wray is probably a good guy. I don't think he's a good FBI director. He certainly does not have the faith and trust of a Republican administration. So he would go if a Republican wins for sure.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Kevin McCarthy was here this morning. And he was, in very stark terms, effectively said that he did not believe that President Biden was the same President Biden that he used to talk to. Went so far as to say that when they were having the debt negotiations, that he didn't even think he was negotiating with him, that he thought he was looking at cards, and that if the information effectively wasn't on the cards, he wasn't able to do it.
With all due respect, when anyone who has had the experience that he has most recently had, I don't think he's a judge of negotiations.
I don't know. Didn't answer the question. Mark Thiessen joins us now from Arlington, Virginia. By the way, we all know the eight people just blew up. Everybody else agreed that he was doing a great job. I don't think everybody on the Democratic side would agree that she's doing a good job. But Mark Thiessen's a big fan of Kamala Harris, talks about her all the time, and joins us now. Is that how you're normally introduced?
It is, every day, yeah.
So
I'm a Kamala Harris fan club, baby.
Right. I mean, she's done so well, and she's so confident, and so good on her feet, and such a workhorse.
That is exactly right. She is just as inarticulate as Joe Biden without the dementia as an excuse.
Right. Put it this way. She would be actually has no excuse that, hey, you know what? I'm 81. I had two brain aneurysms. We don't really know what goes on. And to me, I'm not talking about intellect ever. To me, this is studying. You just got to study. You don't even have to read. You can get briefed. You can get briefed and get ready. You ask Q&A, however you learn. It doesn't seem like she studies.
That's how you and I make it sound like we know what we're talking about.
Right, yeah. We just try to outwork people. And you write. You're writing every day, and you write this great column. First off, your take on what Kevin McCarthy said and how that plays into tonight, DeSantis against Gavin Newsom.
I mean, look, the American people are not stupid. They can see with their own two eyes that Joe Biden isn't there. In the same sense, I mean I've had conversations with, you know, current and former world leaders who have said the same thing about their discussions with Joe Biden on phone calls and things like that. He's not capable of carrying out a substantive, extended, extemporaneous conversation. I mean, maybe sometimes he is. It's like, you know, when people, you know, it's like anyone who's had a loved one with dementia knows there's this phenomenon of sundowners where, you know, at some point earlier in the day, they're better, but then as they get later and more tired, their cognitive abilities decline. I'm sure that he has his moments of lucidity. But he's not – most Americans, you just look at the polls. Democrats, Republicans, independents, liberals, conservatives, you name it. Everybody thinks that he's not capable of carrying out the next finishing a second term. I mean, do you know anybody who thinks that 5 years from now, if Joe Biden wins, that 5 years from now he'll still be president in 2028?
I mean, I don't think he could do. No one ever thought that Barack Obama couldn't do the job. You might disagree with him. No one ever thought that George W. Bush couldn't do the job. You might disagree with them. That's not the case now. Listen to him yesterday in Pueblo, Colorado, cut 13.
We could use it to strengthen the Social Security and Medicare system instead of cutting them, or like Congressman Trump and Bob would want to do. We could use it to help millionaires and millions of families afford, instead of millionaires and millions of families afford a little help with senior care.
So I wish I could get a translator, but there's nobody that could understand what he said. He said Congressman Trump. That's the first time he's ever been called Congressman Trump, ever.
No, exactly right. There's some people that wanted to be Speaker. So in his defense, there was this talk of Speaker Trump. And just look at how Joe Biden has declined in the 3 years that he's been in the Oval Office. I mean, just look, if you just take a video of him speaking right after his inauguration and now – it's like night and day. How is he going to be 3 years from now? How is he going to be 5 years from now? So, I mean, I think even Democrats, they just don't know what to do because they don't have an alternative to him. I think the smart thing that Democrats should do is not necessarily that they can't convince Joe Biden not to run. They're not going to challenge him. What they should convince him to do is to replace Kamala Harris and put somebody else on the ticket who will be the presumptive nominee. What Joe Biden should do is just pick his successor. You avoid a fractious primary, pick somebody who's going to be the Democratic nominee and sort of imply that at some point during the next term, he'll step down and hand it over to that person. It's sort of, you know, you see this in British politics where, you know, you have like, you know, the prime minister is serving and it's understood that at some point he's going to step aside and hand it over to so-and-so, right? You could do that. And that would then, you know, give them a boost in the election and sort of it would be a way to replace Biden without replacing him. But the problem they have is they can't replace Kamala Harris because they are a party that has fully embraced identity politics, and they will never – it'll be harder for them to replace Kamala Harris, the first black woman on the vice president, than it would be to replace Joe Biden. So they're trapped by their identity politics, and she's even less popular than he is.
I want you to hear what Governor Sununu said. Let's listen.
So if it comes down to Trump and Biden, which it most likely will, you're going to vote for Trump then?
Hey, I'm a Republican.
Okay, so you will vote for Trump. Okay.
It's not going to be Trump and Biden, I'm telling you.
So you so think it will be another Republican and Biden?
So I will say this, and I mean this quite sincerely. The party that chooses to move on from Trump or Biden first wins. If the Democrats choose before the Republicans to move on from Biden, before the Republicans choose to move on from Trump, Democrats will win. America is just looking for something new, a new generation, enough of this old old school crap. We need to move forward. And so any new candidate on either side is going to win this election.
What's your thoughts on that?
I 100% agree with that. I mean, look, the polls are just absolutely clear. The super majorities of Americans don't want a Trump-Biden rematch. And but the problem with that is that, you know, if you're a Democrat and you don't want Biden as your nominee, you're not going to vote for Trump. And if you're a Republican, you know, Joe Biden is literally the most unpopular president not named Jimmy Carter since the end of World War II. Most Americans think, Republicans think he's a disaster. Independents think he's a disaster. Moderates think he's a disaster. They're not going to vote for Biden. You know, so they're trapped in these bad choices that they don't want. And he's absolutely right. The party that figures that out and takes some and chooses a different nominee. I mean, you just look at that New York Times Siena poll that came out, which showed that Trump was sort of narrowly ahead in swing states. And that was set a five alarm fire for the Democrats. Trump could actually win this election. You look at that same poll and look at how Nikki Haley does against Joe Biden. I mean, double digits. It crushes him in those swing states, you know, at that. And vice versa, if you take Biden off, if you have a generic Democrat running against Trump in all those swing states, the Democrats crush Trump. So the voters are very clear that they don't want either one of these. If they're forced to choose, either one of them could win.
Well, the last poll I saw, Trump beat Gavin Newsom, and I think that's their golden boy, right?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I don't know why the Democrats would think that picking the person who embodies everything that Americans hate about the Democratic Party, which is California, and making him the, I mean, just I guess he's, you know, good looking, looks presidential, you know, sounds presidential. So somehow that makes up for everything. It's like this is a state where, you know, up until for the last two centuries, people have been moving to California. And under Gavin Newsom, for the first time in 200 years, they've had a net out migration of people. They ran out of U-Hauls in the state of California. Why would that be your success, chosen successor? I have no idea.
So I want to bring you to your column. Your column you wrote about, hey, Ukraine, guess what? Most of the money that we're giving, most of the weaponry we're giving to Ukraine, the money stays here. Can you explain?
So one of the best-kept secrets about U.S. military aid to Ukraine is that the money is being spent here. The money that lawmakers are approving to arm Ukraine isn't going to Ukraine. It's going to American communities, American defense factories, and they're using it to build either to replace weapons that we send to Ukraine or build new weapons for Ukraine. And that is doing a number of things. It is creating jobs. It's creating manufacturing jobs in America. It is strengthening those communities economically, and it's also revitalizing our defense industrial base so that we can produce weapons for other adversaries like Taiwan or to help Israel. And most people don't realize it. We identified, doing our research, 117 production lines in 31 states in 71 cities that are benefiting directly from aid to Ukraine. 90% of the money that we spend to arm Ukraine stays in America. And that's helping our national security. I'll give you a perfect example of it. Stinger missiles, right? Most people don't realize that the United States has not built a Stinger missile since 2005. And the reason for that is we spent the last 20 years fighting terrorists who didn't have airplanes, except when they hijacked them. So, you know, Stinger is an anti-aircraft missile that's designed to shoot down fighter planes. Well, guess who has fighters? China. So if you're going to have a conflict with China, you need Stinger missiles. Ukraine needs Stinger missiles. We've now signed contracts for $465 million to build Stinger missiles again. So that means we have a warm production line producing a weapon that we will need against almost any adversary that we could fight in the coming years. So this is helping our national security, creating warm assembly lines and creating jobs here at home. It's a benefit to the American communities as much as it is to Ukraine.
So why do you think more people don't know this?
Because I think the people who do know it aren't highlighting it. So I mean, you know, you look at somebody like J.D. Vance, who is a senator from Ohio. He is state, Ohio, has the only tank factory in America, and they're producing M1 Abrams tanks to go to Ukraine. He's an anti-Ukraine senator. He'd be the person to be shot if, you know, if Rob Portman was still the senator from Ohio, he'd be pointing out that, you know, we need more Abrams tanks to Ukraine because we need to create more jobs for workers in Lima, Ohio, who are producing them. But a lot of, you know, you got Josh Hawley in Missouri. They're producing two weapons for Ukraine, the JDAM-ER, which is a weapon that basically what it does is it takes dumb bombs and turns them into smart bombs. It didn't exist before the Ukraine war. The Boeing created it for Ukraine, and it's being sent over there. That's a weapon that we would give to Taiwan. That's a JDAM-ER is a weapon that Israel could use. But he's against Ukraine aid, so they're not highlighting these things because they don't want people to realize that it's actually helping their states and their communities, but they're actually voting against their constituents.
And just in the big picture with this legislation, they want the administration wants Ukraine funded, Israel funded, Taiwan funded, and the Republicans say not without the border. I love that deal. I think the Republicans have leverage on it. I think they could still get it done if they wanted to and saw the urgency before the holidays. And I also want to make sure it doesn't go to housing. I don't want housing for illegals. I want border security. So what do you've seen so much of this happen, Mark. What do you think the chances are?
I think the chances are pretty good on that, and I think it's a good deal, and Republicans should take it. I mean, we should help Israel, we should help Taiwan, we should help Ukraine, and we should secure the border. I mean, that's like, you know, that's better than a trifecta. That's a quadrifecta, if that's a word. And all of those things help America. You know, I mean, so if you think about the one of the things we're doing with the Ukraine military aid is we are sending the Ukrainian stuff out of our stockpiles, which is often decades old. And then we're replacing it with new modern versions. So it's a military modernization program for the United States because we send them old weapons with old technology, which they use against the Russians, and then we get brand new weapons that the Army and the services can use that are just off the assembly line and are the top of the line. So it's like giving them a used car and buying yourself a brand new one. That's a good deal for Ukraine. That's a good deal for America. So we should. I think people just need to realize that aid to Ukraine, it's a misnomer. It's not aid to. It's not just aid to Ukraine. It's aid to Lima, Ohio. It's aid to Arkansas. It's aid to Alabama. It's aid to Florida. It's aid to 31 U.S. states that are producing this, and it's aid to the United States military. It's giving them new weapons that are going to make our country more secure and safer.
So prediction for tonight.
I think DeSantis is going to. If DeSantis can't win this, I mean, all the substance is on his side. Everybody, literally, millions of people are voting with their feet, leaving Newsom State, moving to Florida. If you can't make that case, then you certainly can't win the presidency. I think he should crush him.
I do believe that DeSantis could re-energize. I mean, he's got the governor of Iowa. That's great. He's got Bob Vanderplaat. We just spoke to him. That's great for him. But I think that if you go ahead and wipe the floor with Gavin Newsom. I think that it's as close to boxing as you get. That sends a great message to the so-called champion. I'm coming for you. Give me a chance to debate you next. Maybe there's pressure on Trump to do that afterwards. And I would love to see Trump, DeSantis, Nikki Haley, and Chris Christie together.
Yeah, I would take Chris Christie out of that picture. Chris Christie doesn't have a chance in hell of winning the Republican nomination. There are only two candidates after these months of this primary. It's down to two people. There are two primaries. There's the primary to challenge Trump, and then there's a primary against Trump for the Republican nomination. And we got to conclude the first one before we can do the second one. And so if the next debate, if Trump isn't there, it should be a Haley versus DeSantis debate for who gets to take on Trump. And then at some point, that's got to get settled, and it got to go against Trump because otherwise he wins with a plurality of the vote, not with a majority.
He is Mark Thiessen. Mark, I just hope the administration reads the Washington Post. I believe they get the paper boy dropped it off at 11 o'clock today. Maybe it was 7 a.m. And they just read your column and say, wait a second, can someone put this in one of my speeches? So it's really important.
I would love this. I'd love for that to happen. I'm not holding my breath.
All right, Mark Thiessen, thanks so much.
Take care.
All right. I'm really looking forward to this debate tonight. I'll come back, wrap things up. Also, go to BrianKilmeade.com. Find out where I'll be. Teddy and Booker T this weekend. Heading to Texas, heading to Alabama, starting off in St. Louis. Don't move.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. I just want to, Teddy and Booker T, the book that the two American icons who blaze a path to racial equality is now out. Thanks for leaving it 3 weeks now on the New York Times list. This weekend, I'm going to be with KFTK. It's going to be fantastic. I'm going to be there tomorrow. So it's going to be great. I hope to see everyone there that can get there. If it is sold out, and if you don't have a ticket, if you go to BrianKilmeade.com and it'll go to my local bookstore and be personalized, or if you want to leave a book there, I'll definitely sign it and personalize if you leave a little sticky pad on it. Number two, then I'm going to go out to Dallas, Texas, and I'm going to go first to Harker Heights at 11 o'clock, December 2nd, and then I'm going to be at the George W. Bush Library from 3 to 5. And then on December 3rd, Page and Pallet, Fairhope, Alabama. Last time the whole town came out, and it's going to be great. Special thanks to WHIO listeners. I think we're sold out already December 8th. But December 9th, I'll be in Lexington, Kentucky, Joseph Beth Booksellers. I've been there. It is great. And December 10th in Charlotte, North Carolina at 4 at Barnes & Noble. Then I got two live shows. That's where I get a chance to talk about all my books, live interaction on stage. I have little skits planned out to bring some of these scenes to life. It is fun, patriotic, motivational, inspirational. I'll be in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the 15th at 8:30, and then in Holland, the Holland Civic Center in Holland, Michigan, December 16th. There you need tickets. It's co-sponsored by Fox Nation. And with it, you get – there's going to be deals there. I think it was a free 6 months of Fox Nation, which is this awesome app where you get the Patriot Awards and all these great things with Rob Lowe and all these other great artists. Thanks so much for listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Keep it here. Don't forget, I'm on the 5 tonight at 5 o'clock. And don't forget, One Nation, Saturdays at 9.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, the Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.